Welcome to another episode of EduChats. I'm Tim Kitchen. Today I'm chatting with Stephen Colbert, who teaches at Brunswick Secondary College in Melbourne, and he's also the Executive Secretary at Teachers Across Borders Australia. Stephen, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about Teachers Across Borders Australia.
All right, let me think. So we've been running for about 13 years. We take Australian teachers. Originally, there was a Teachers Across Borders USA and Australia. And basically, it was just that, visits to Cambodia, realizing after the Khmer Rouge, the sort of mass killing of teachers and educated people, they had a lot of sort of humanitarian aid that was required. And so we have always run programs to, originally we had three different cities that we went to and basically upskilled teachers for, you know, all of the years of our operation. And just sort of the very tricky part from the outset was to be kind of not colonialists by another name. So it wasn't us turning up and saying, hey, we're from a developed, you know, Australia, and we're kind of the white saviors, but rather to come in and say, here's how we do things here in Australia, and here's, you know, here's our ideas on how it might work if you try and translate it over to where you are. So that's always been the aim. And just recently, our president retired, and he was awarded the Order of Australia Medal just earlier this year. And so now my wife is the president and I'm the secretary, and we're kind of keeping the fire along as it goes.
That's great. So if any teacher is interested in being part of it, is there a website they can go to?
Yeah, we're at teachersacrossborders.org.au, and we're currently working on a way to sort of deliver our program via an online conference in some format. And so that's kind of an evolving project that we're working on now. We're always looking for volunteers, people to support us with fundraising, and just to spread the word and get the word out there. So,
absolutely. And I imagine that this year you wouldn't be traveling to Cambodia, but how many trips would you do per year, for instance?
Depends on the year. We did two last year. So basically for about the last 5 years, my wife and I have spent two of our school holidays, mid-year and January, and the Christmas holidays over in Cambodia in various cities, and just, yeah, running programs around kind of curriculum areas. So we take a science teacher over to teach science and talk about pedagogy, and yeah, very, very exciting stuff, really challenging to sort of, you know, for, I imagine your audience kind of skews a bit technical, a bit techie, and to go over there where it's sort of mobile phone devices, blackboards, dirt floors, and sort of really old-fashioned wooden desks is sort of a really useful experience to sort of test your mettle as a teacher. You know, how can you do it without all the shiny things that we like to use?
We take a lot for granted, don't we, in a country like Australia? But when you go to a developing country like Cambodia, you really get to experience what, in a sense, probably most of the world actually is like. I was involved with taking groups of people over to Israel, and particularly helping out the Palestinian community in Nazareth. My father ran 20 of these trips, and I got involved in three of them, and I've been there five times. And that was just before I started as a teacher, so a long, long time ago. So I know what it's like to organize a trip like that with a group of young people or a group of people to try and make a difference. So congratulations, and keep up that great work.
Yeah, we'll do. Cool.
So tell us about the work you do at Brunswick Secondary College.
Alrighty. So let me think. Basically, I've always been an English humanities teacher. I'm just entering now my 10th year, so a decade of teaching, which feels like a lot at one place. And then recently I added a EAL or a TESOL qualification. So now I teach English as an additional language. And as of the last 2 years, there's a Victorian program called the Middle Years Literacy and Numeracy Support Program. And so I work with very sort of disadvantaged students who are either EAL, low literacy, or have a disability. And so I sort of do work reasonably flexibly with those sort of students and their teachers to kind of support inclusion and differentiation and try and upskill and kind of change the approaches that we've been doing. Though it's not really like a ticketed role, I've always been pushing for instructional video, flipped learning, and kind of, you know, ed tech type approaches to teaching. And so obviously we'll talk about this later, but COVID has been something of a boon for people such as ourselves who are trying to get people to upskill their kind of technical skills around education. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. That pretty much sums up the work I do, yeah.
Well, like in many parts of Melbourne, Brunswick is a very multicultural part of the city, and you would have probably, I don't know, lots and lots of different countries represented at your school. So you'd be doing some amazing work there. Tell us about how did you get involved in education? You've been teaching, you said, for just over 10 years. What drew you to teaching? Were you doing anything before you became a teacher?
No, basically I'm one of the few who sort of came out of high school, did a 4-year combined arts and a Bachelor of Arts, which, you know, is all of a sudden a very valuable degree because I've just hiked the prices on that. But basically, I enjoyed study and learning new things. And so that was kind of my goal. I figured I should do an arts degree. But there was also the feeling from people that an arts degree is, you know, useful if you're going to become a barista and not much else. And so I figured I'll chuck an education degree on there as well. And yeah, at the end of 4 years, there was, you know, the lecture hall of 400 people had shrunk down to about 20 or 30, and I kind of started to twig that maybe there was a reason that I was still there with kind of all the people that were really committed to education. And so I think Brunswick Secondary might have been the second job I applied for and got, and so been a good ride since then.
That's terrific. Yeah. So why a teacher? What there must have been some sort of catalyst or reason for you to you know, join the teaching profession.
I guess it, for me at the start at least, it was all kind of, you know, I really enjoyed the content and learning new things. And then after doing a whole bunch of rounds, you start to realize that you have a certain affinity with not necessarily young people, because I've also taught, you know, adult migrants and in Cambodia a fair bit, people often quite older than me. But it's just sort of being in that kind of helping profession and being able to work side by side with people who are trying to improve themselves. So that's always been, you know, that's the thing that gets me up excited in the morning rather than, you know, dragging myself out of bed. So being able to help people and get them to see what the world's about and engage with the richness of learning has always been an exciting proposition for me, I think.
So were you actually involved in Cambodia before you became a teacher?
I think my first experience in Cambodia was my wife and I's honeymoon. I sort of took her around, she's from Brisbane originally, took her around to see if she'd survive in the Southeast Asia, which is where my family was sort of that first generation of Lonely Planet kind of travelers. So we kind of always went to Southeast Asia around there. Yeah, and it was my wife who saw a little, tiny little advertisement for Teachers Across Borders in Cambodia in some small Australian publication. And so we sought that out. And yeah, we sort of have probably run 5 or 6 workshops on middle years literacy. So I would have been maybe my second or third year and her in maybe her 5th or 6th. And so teaching with your life partner is probably not something I'd recommend, especially not via an interpreter in the, you know, thinking hot 40 degree, no aircon sort of classroom. But we learn a lot about each other, let's say. And it's just such an exciting experience to sort of be among people who, despite living in a country completely different to ours, like teachers are teachers are teachers is sort of the thing that I've come to realize. We work as well with Teachers Across Borders Sweden, and you meet them, and it's just like, yep, we're all kind of the same, bookish, focused, kind of focused on improving outcomes in the world, sort of, and the same with our Khmer colleagues. And it's just, yeah, teachers are teachers everywhere you go. And that's really kind of grounding and exciting to know that there's this, you know, weird subspecies of humans that get up every morning and want to read books and read them aloud and share them with students and those sort of things.
And is your wife still teaching at the moment?
She's an English media teacher, so she does film production and all that sort of stuff, which has always been amusing because I'm the one with the YouTube channel making videos for my students. You know, I've just hit 500 videos produced or something, and she's always just like for her, that's kind of, that's just what she teaches rather than what she does day to day. So it's always been a really interesting kind of, like she probably could have right at the start told me how to do everything I'm doing now much better than I was at the start. She deals and the cameras and the, you know, probably storyboard and we should do some B-roll and maybe even some soundscapes. But between the two of us, you know, we've come to a very good place, I guess. But it's interesting.
Sounds like I probably should be doing a podcast with her soon.
You should, you should. She's very, you know, publicity shy, let's say.
Now, Stephen, you mentioned that COVID-19 has led to some changes at Brunswick Secondary College. Tell us, how did your school manage during the isolation period?
I think we did very well. We felt very prepared. Kind of when the sort of the closures were discussed, we originally had our parent teacher interviews planned, so we were able to transfer that into like a whole day staff PD. But just sort of as a result of, we have a new learning technologies leader and he came in and transitioned us to Microsoft Teams. So we sort of had that platform reasonably well developed. And, you know, for the last 5 years, I've always been any chance I get jumping up to present PD on, you know, how to make videos and how to consider flipped learning, instructional video, blended learning, whatever it is. So it's kind of the sort of thing where everyone was at least aware of how to make a video and, you know, that video conferencing was something you could do and something maybe that some of us regularly did in our teaching and outside of our teaching. So basically, once it became clear that we were going to work from home, we basically brought in no new apps, no new technology. We just said we're using what we've always used, but we will be relying on video conferencing a little bit more than we had. So I can't speak for everyone. Obviously, I was perhaps a little bit more prepared than most, but the feedback from all of the teachers following the weeks since our return have been that they learned sort of more about their own pedagogy, how to be more specific in kind of setting clear goals, how to kind of be a little bit more engaging while speaking to a video camera, how to include students, how to sort of connect with students via distance. So yeah, technologically very sound, we were very prepared, and I guess a lot of personal growth for teachers who have sort of picked up the things that we've been talking about for a fairly long time. And so now we're just sort of aiming to keep those things going into the sort of the post-COVID as well. In Victoria, not so much, but you know, an eventual hopeful working back face-to-face full-time. We should have some new tools to pull out.
Yeah, that sort of leads nicely into the next question. You've mentioned blended learning a few times now, and do you think that COVID-19 will enhance the use of blended learning approaches to teaching and learning now that all these new skills have been developed by your colleagues?
I'm in two minds, to be honest. I would like to say, you know, the optimistic part of me says yes. Even if I think of my Cambodian colleagues, every time I'm on Facebook, there's photos or video of them presenting lessons, you know, via video directly to Facebook or to WhatsApp or Telegram or whatever apps that they're using with their students. So it's definitely very possible. The issue, I think, in Australia, probably if I'm being a bit more pessimistic, is just the amount of time that teachers have available. So at least at the start, you sort of need to invest a bit of time into upskilling and kind of, you know, you might need to learn how to edit a video perhaps, or what apps, you know, you're most comfortable producing a video or a podcast with so that you can be a bit more flexible with your delivery. So there's a little bit more of a time requirement to get that started. And so as much as I'd like to think, you know, that instead of video conferencing full-time with their students, our teachers might have paused and produced a video instead that then could be uploaded somewhere and referred to at any time by our students. And there's definitely a big growth of that at our school. It's just a matter of kind of, we need a bit more time. So hopefully our teachers have both a very relaxing but also productive holidays when they start to think about all these exciting new things that they did and whether or not there might be a way forward for using those tools or those methods to reach students. I know personally for me, that's been the case, like coming back, especially the sort of the more quiet, the shy, the students even with autism spectrum disorder that kind of are a bit more reserved in a social setting, using the sort of remote learning techniques to communicate with them. So, you know, you might be adding a quick chat message, you know, when they're looking a bit like they're perhaps not ready to engage with you and the class in something, has been a really clear way forward, and sort of just upskilling the kids as well about how to engage with video content rather than, you know, the same old worksheets. And even, you know, we were able to do some things that were really quite interesting. Like, you know, we had sort of like a legal debate via a video conference. So we sort of, you know, had all sorts of different sort of discussions and little breakout groups where the students were working together. So it's sort of, it's also changed the students' perspective, I guess. Like they're expecting not to come back to just, you know, teachers standing at the front and handing out worksheets. They realized that they were trusted to work independently and to work in groups and even to lead groups in many occasions. So I think there's a whole bunch of positives, like the students' ideas of what's possible have changed, and the teachers have changed as well. But the thing that holds us back probably the most is just, you know, like the whole day PD of us upskilling on how to use Teams and how to communicate and how to post messages and upload files and do all the basic things. It would be lovely to have a couple more days devoted to that sort of thing, you know, whether the department or individual schools could sort of just say, you know, you've got a couple of days to reflect. Obviously, we've had at my school at least lots of meetings discussing that. But just sort of to put forward the resources and commit the time to thinking a little bit of time into making videos with the goal that, you know, next time that unit or that piece of content comes back around, you've got that video waiting there. So next time around, instead of just saying, standing there and delivering it again, you've got the video. You can start to think about the kind of things that get me excited, sort of group work, project-based learning, all those kind of possibilities. And I'm not a big project-based learning type of person myself, but the use of video or blended learning allows for a whole bunch of different possibilities that I'm only kind of starting to begin to explore for myself. So there's a lot in there. So I guess after a very long talk just then, I would say I'm mostly positive that it can happen, but I think it could be fed up with a little bit of time from someone committed to giving teachers time to really consolidate what they learn and not just make it be a flash in the pan or a, you know, one day PD that gets you excited and then the next day you're back into a full, you know, four on or six on or whatever a full block of teaching is at your school, and you sort of forget the learnings that you had on the PD or on the period of time.
Yeah, well, the concept of video literacy has been a major part of what I've been doing this year, particularly with during the isolation period. I wish I had a dollar for every video workshop I've had to run over the last few months. And it's been fantastic to see how teachers have realized the potential of developing their video literacy skills and how that can help not only them with their own communication, but then when they pass on those skills, if the students don't already have them, but when they pass them on to their students to give them an opportunity then to construct their learning in a creative, engaging and collaborative way in many cases. It's been great. It kind of leads me to an interesting question, a question sort of without notice, I suppose, but it's been 12 months now since the Adobe Creative Cloud has been available to all of the Victorian government secondary schools. And I think we're just about to hit the 12-month anniversary when that became available. And it's been interesting to see, it's been a very slow drip feed type approach, I think, over the last 12 months. And you've got them now for another 2 years before the next renewal of the license, I think, happens. Have you noticed at your school an awareness that they have these applications? And if so, which ones do you see as the ones that have been most helpful for you, but also your colleagues?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, and you probably would know the timeline better than me, but I remember having to sort of seek out in the department website, you know, there was a place that you could pay quite a small fee to get the full, you know, so I spent several hours in the IT department kind of working out how do I get it and really playing around. I did a lot of sort of the education exchange courses and sort of taught myself media basics from there using Premiere Pro back then. And then since obviously it's become free, it's become a lot easier because it was always something that I felt was sort of maybe more, this was before I learned all about Spark, I guess, but I felt like that was sort of me leveling up my skill from kind of consumer level to professional. And so for me, that was like a real stretch and a real challenge to become quite proficient at Premiere. And then since it became free, I've been banging on about Spark a whole bunch with my students, especially we've only just started a unit on advertising. So we're doing all this work around radio ads, TV ads, and posters. And so using Spark for two of the three of those and sort of sharing those around with colleagues as tools that, because, you know, same as you, like I often present on here's how to make videos and how to do them properly and to make them engaging and yada yada, and here's what the research says. And you always kind of have to have a tiered approach of kind of, you know, like if I'm at the Flip Learning Conference, I'm going to say, okay, cool, we can use Premiere, we can use Camtasia, yada, yada, yada. Audacity is really good for editing, whatever it is. But then say, like if I'm presenting at a CRT conference or early career teachers, you bring it right down to the bottom and you might have, like, you know, Windows Movie Maker, which has thankfully just been replaced, and Adobe Spark and those kind of entry level, maybe even Flipgrid, you know, you press the big red button after you've logged in and then you're ready to go. You can do it on your phone. You really need those sort of tools to build confidence, to get the kind of people newer to the idea on board. And so I've found Spark especially useful for that. And then I keep Premiere Pro as kind of my own secret tool that I use if I really want to show up and make a video that, you know, has really good B-roll and maybe multiple soundtracks and all those sort of things, interactive features, yada yada. But yeah, Spark has been a game changer for the sort of things that I do personally and to get students on board, because I feel like if you can teach a tool to a student, then you can teach it to a teacher in a very short amount of time, which is quite often the amount of time you're given. So yeah, I'd be keen to hear more about the way you do video literacy and how you sort of run your courses, but yeah, I found those very useful for sure.
And what about the other teachers? Have you been able to spark any engagement with your colleagues with Adobe Spark?
I have, yeah. Especially as I'm saying, the unit that I've just done and kind of, what was it? I think just coming out of Corona, coming back to school, I ran probably the last online PD that we'll do as a school for a little while at least, because we went back to face-to-face. I was able to sort of, in about half an hour, rattle off all the tools and how easy it was and show them the interface. Let me think. And then, yeah, so if I think of our online little platform, we stream a fair bit and post our videos. There's been a couple of Adobe Sparks sparkling in the bottom right-hand corner. So, yeah, I would say there's been some pickup if I pick up your pun and run with it.
Oh, that's great. So, Stephen, tell us about where you see the future of education heading.
Very good timing. Just as of Tuesday, I moderated a conversation at EduTech Asia on more or less the same thing, future-proofing education. And so the panelists I'd put together, I was actually quite surprised. They were from Indonesia, Malaysia, China, and the Philippines, sorry. And they were basically, three of the four of them were saying that they don't think in 20 years' time that there will be a school, a physical class. There won't be any kind of bricks and mortar schools, but that the learning will take place anywhere, anytime. And I think for me, which I don't know, might surprise, blended learning and sort of remote learning taught me the value of that. So the utility of a bricks and mortar school, to have everyone come in together at our school, at least in the same uniform, and kind of the disadvantage was less visible than it was online, because obviously we don't have full internet penetration in Australia as we probably should, and you know there's a whole range of disadvantage within Australia compared to all the other OECD countries and yada yada yada. But to me, a school is really valuable for the sort of work that I do, because you get all the students in the same school at the same time between the same hours, and if you need to do intervention for those students who are behind to catch them up, the school is the perfect place for that. I'm conscious of the fact also that you could do that via remote learning, but And I mean, my wife used to work in that role for 2 years, sort of the students that didn't make it to school for whatever reason would get sort of really quite intensive online learning support from her and her colleagues. So I know it can be done, but to me, there will always be some sort of a human engagement, some classroom, some space where people come together. As much as, you know, video conferencing is amazing in that you can talk to anyone in the world at any time, it's not quite the same, and especially not for adolescents, at least. Like, I'm quite happy to do online courses where I never see a soul, but that's obviously because I'm, you know, a relatively advanced lifelong learner. I've been around, I've done my schooling, I've done my group work, and I'm quite happy to do it all online. You know, that obviously has some sacrifices for making connections, but it has some benefits in that you can do it flexibly and asynchronously. But I think for adolescents, like I teach at secondary school, they'll always need to come to a place and talk to a teacher that hopefully is inspiring and excited about what they're doing. So yeah, the future to me is will definitely be a lot more blended, but it will also need the human element. Yeah, my big thing is using technology to enhance the human element. So that's why video is important to me, not because it replaces me, but it empowers me to do things that, in flipped learning anyway, we always talk about, you know, what, maybe once a year, if you're lucky, you get a bunch of kids that have really done the work and they're all up to date. And then all of a sudden you think, oh, we could have a debate, we could have a discussion, we could do, you know, yada, 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 and then it might be 3 or 4 years until you have a class that's at the same level and that's, you know, so as hardworking, so you don't really get to develop the muscle of that skill or that activity or that type of learning very often. But more and increasingly, the more videos I make, that becomes more possible. And then I, you know, there's the potential to actually become good at that rather than to just, you know, do it once a year or two times a year and sort of think, oh, that was an exciting, you know, possibility, but not something that can be consistently built upon or scaled up. So what do you think? What do you think about the future of education?
Oh, we could go on for ages. I agree with a lot of what you were saying there. I was just reflecting on an experience I had last week with Halebury College, where I'm not allowed to travel at the moment. I'm not allowed to meet face-to-face with students or teachers. So everything has been done online, like what we're doing now. So we ended up running an all-day workshop with these Year 9 students at three different campuses. They were together with their teachers. I was here in my office, and I ran the video workshop at the start of the day, gave them several hours to do a project, and then at the end of the day, we had a showcase, and I gave out some prizes. We did some peer judging and so on. And then for the next few days after that, I was getting these emails from the teachers saying just what an incredible experience it was for them. And thinking, okay, there's not a lot different to what we do in the class if I was there. But the fact that they were able to engage with someone from Adobe, I think, made a big difference. So the concept of actually connecting with experts from around the world in a blended learning approach opens up the world in lots of different ways. And one of the teachers said, wouldn't it be great if we did this internationally and then maybe get together with some other classes from other countries at the same time and we could all just share each other's videos? And thinking, yeah, absolutely. All of that is very, very possible these days. So an example of the future of education. One more question for you. One of the research tasks that I've been trying to get off the ground, and I won't mention the university where I came very close to getting it off the ground, was I have this hypothesis that if the student's own teacher has made the video in a flipped environment, say, then it becomes a better learning experience for that student because the student knows that teacher can understand a lot more of the communication through body language and just because there's a relationship there, rather than going to the Khan Academy or going to YouTube or just grabbing anything from anywhere. It's just a theory I have. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, just before, because you mentioned Halebury, how do I say it?
Yeah, that's right, Halebury College.
Because, yeah. Basically, as of last year, I took my learning technologies leader to a conference and we saw Lauren Sayer present about Halebury, which sounds weird when I say it for some reason. And she was talking about all the things that I'm sure she spoke to you about for her, when she spoke to you for one of these. And it was kind of that experience that really lit a fire about what was possible for us at our school. So I got to give credit where credit is due. You know, I'd been doing very much video and in the study of my house, you know, in my own little secret chamber, let's call it. And then it was taking being her present on what they were doing with video at that school that made us realize, oh, we should be doing this at our school. And so now we've got, like, you know, our own little video design room where you can podcast and coach and video and all that stuff. But yeah, so in terms of the actual question, there was a guy, Jeremy LeCornu. He wrote his PhD or master's thesis, I'm not exactly sure, on that very topic, create or curate. And it seemed to fall very clearly on the curate side. And it's kind of, a lot of the research on video is quite common sense, you know, like if your face is in the video, the students will learn more and all those kind of things. If you gesture, that's better. If it's shorter, that's better. Of course, that all makes sense. But you would think better production values would be better. Like, so as you say, like, I mean, having said that, Khan Academy is an incredible looking video. It's very rudimentary, really. But you would think that professionally, you know, graphics and green screen, I mean, I do a bit of green screen myself, but it's not professional standard. You'd think that would be a lot better. But what we found, at least from anecdotally and from the limited research base, I mean, a lot of this is still developing, is, yeah, if you make it yourself and your students understand that, you know, Sir or Miss was away yesterday and then all of a sudden this video pops up explaining what we have to do, that's a lot better. And from my experience, like, if you tell teachers, you know, you can go onto YouTube and find a video, every teacher that I've ever spoken to would look at that whatever video of whatever, regardless of how good a teacher they were, and sort of go, oh yeah, I wouldn't teach it like that, you know, I'd give it a little bit of this, or I'd twist it in this little way. And so invariably, you spend too much time trying to find a video that does what you want it to do, it's probably just quicker for you to, you know, hit record on OBS or whatever you've got, start recording your screen, press the camera app, press the red button, and just start teaching like you normally teach. And that will almost always be better, regardless of how bad you are at it, with the exception of maybe bad audio. Like, that's one of the sins that you can't really get around. If it's, you know, if you're expecting kids to listen on headphones and you're crackling and buzzing in the background, that's unacceptable and they wouldn't do that. But, you know, if you stuff up, stumble over your words, say the wrong thing, and, you know, have to edit in the correct word or a definition that you've stuffed up, we find that has a large positive effect on learning. So the kids really benefit from you personally explaining things how you normally explain it, and then actually being able to follow through on that kind of connection element. So remote learning showed that especially, right? Like, you know, you can't just be saying, watch this video of this person you've never met, and feel like they'll actually have a connection with that person. So my answer is, yeah, make your own is key.
Well, that's very comforting advice for many teachers out there who are trying to do exactly that. And with tools like Adobe Spark that make it so easy to make a video, it's great. And Premiere Rush was the next level up, of course, from Spark, that is becoming very popular in schools all over the world, which is great. And I just had a meeting with another state in another part of our country, which I won't actually mention exactly, but they're very excited that they're finally getting on board with able to use Premiere Rush. But Victoria have been able to use it for a while, and so that's been terrific to see. Stephen, thank you so much for your time, and really appreciate your wisdom and the experience. And I want to wish you all the very best with Teachers Across Borders Australia. And if you do get any engagement from other teachers who watch this, I hope that comes about. I've actually been having a chat with my, he's a second cousin who's the assistant ambassador to Cambodia. So I'm making links for you just in case you need them in the future. So all the best. I hope that works out for you. And thanks again for your time, Stephen.
Beautiful. Thank you.